Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
Ethan approached cemeteries the way he approached archives, with patience, skepticism, and an eye for the small errors that accumulate when decades pass and no one is paid to notice. He wasn't sentimental about graveyards. He didn't linger for atmosphere. Headstones were records. Rows were indexes. A buried name was, more often than not, a problem of paperwork rather than mystery. The problem that brought him north in early October had been sitting unresolved in his family research for years. Two names, an adult and an infant, appeared in an 1894 burial ledger with a note that said simply, "North of the Common Yard." No plot number, no hand-drawn map, nothing a modern cemetery office could use. Later, county records placed the burials across the bay, but there were no markers there, no cemetery log that matched, and no living relative who remembered the details. Ethan had chased enough of these discrepancies to know how they usually ended. A miscopied line in a registry, a township boundary redrawn, a clerk guessing the most convenient answer. What made this one harder to ignore was a marginal note he'd found in a county archive months earlier. The note was brief, almost casual, and written in the kind of faded ink that suggested it had never been meant for public emphasis. It mentioned that the Lakeside Cemetery in its earliest years had maintained a colored ground near the back boundary. The note didn't say when it stopped being used or whether anything remained. It acknowledged only that the division had existed. Ethan hadn't grown up in this town. He had no inherited folklore about it. He was there because his ledger said those two names belonged somewhere, and because history has a habit of leaving the hardest work to whoever comes later and still cares enough to correct it. The town was quiet when he arrived. Tourist season had retreated, leaving the marina half empty and the small shops along the water closed behind papered windows. The lake wind was cold and clean, carrying the faint mineral smell of water and the sharper scent of pine from the wooded slopes beyond. The day was bright but softened by high cloud cover, the kind of light that makes everything look honest. The cemetery sat on a low rise above the shoreline, enclosed by a modest iron fence that had been repainted often enough to remain functional. Ethan parked along the gravel shoulder and pushed open the gate, which complained softly on its hinge before settling behind him. Inside, the ground sloped gently toward the water. Older limestone markers leaned at irregular angles, their inscriptions softened nearly flat. Newer stones stood more upright, their edges sharper, their lettering machine cut and confident. It looked like any maintained rural cemetery. Nothing about it suggested drama. Ethan walked slowly, ledger page folded in his pocket, scanning names and dates with the practiced focus of someone who knew the difference between coincidence and confirmation. He wasn't searching for the dead in any spiritual sense. He was searching for the stubbornness of documentation, for the places where paper insisted on one reality and stone insisted on another. After 20 minutes, he reached the rear boundary of the cemetery. The iron fence curved toward a line of trees, and beyond them, the lake flashed silver through branches. There was no secondary fence, no signage, no visible section set apart. If north of the common yard meant a segregated ground, it had been absorbed by time and neglect or deliberately erased by later tidiness. He stood there for a moment, orienting himself with the slope and the rows behind him, imagining how north might have been interpreted in 1894. Then he became aware of a sound that did not belong to the wind. At first, it registered as a subtle cadence, an irregular rhythm carried on the air. Then it clarified into something distinctly human, a male voice speaking in a calm, unhurried tone. Ethan turned slightly, scanning the visible rows. He hadn't heard the gate open. He hadn't seen a car when he arrived. The cemetery was small enough that another visitor should have been obvious. The voice continued, not raised, not echoing, as if the speaker stood close by and had no reason to project. Ethan followed the sound toward the far corner near the trees. As he walked, he noticed that the texture of the afternoon seemed to shift. The wind remained steady, but the smaller sounds of the place, the faint scratch of grass, the movement of birds, felt muted. It wasn't silence exactly. It was as if the background had stepped back to let the voice come forward. Near the back boundary, he saw something that should not have been there, a low wire enclosure standing several yards inside the iron fence line. Thin wire was stretched between narrow wooden posts, forming a rough square. The opening was unsecured, as though meant to be lifted and stepped through. Inside the enclosure stood rows of white wooden crosses. They were plain, uniform, and unmarked. No names carved into them, no dates, no inscriptions at all. The voice came from within that square. A man sat near one corner, hat resting loosely in his hands, speaking toward a mound of darker soil at his feet. He wasn't hunched in grief. He wasn't performing for anyone. His voice carried the familiarity of someone continuing a conversation that had started long before Ethan arrived. "She always said the winters came too soon here," the man was saying. "Never waited for the leaves." Ethan stopped at the edge of the wire. The ground inside the enclosure looked slightly darker than the surrounding grass, and the air within the square felt denser, as though it held sound differently. The man glanced up and met Ethan's eyes without surprise, then returned his attention to the mound. Ethan hesitated only a moment before stepping through the opening. The ground yielded slightly beneath his shoes. Up close, the crosses were even more unsettling in their simplicity. The absence of names felt deliberate. "There aren't any inscriptions," Ethan said quietly. The man nodded once. "There weren't meant to be." The statement landed as fact, without explanation, without bitterness. Ethan felt a slow tightening in his chest. He had read enough early community history to understand what nameless crosses could mean, and he understood why a section like this might disappear from modern maps. "How long has this section been here?" Ethan asked. The man looked toward the lake. "Long enough," he said. As Ethan shifted his stance, he noticed a small wooden placard affixed to one of the posts near the opening. The paint was faded, but the lettering remained legible, colored. The word stood alone, unadorned, a label that carried the weight of a town's choices without needing any commentary. Ethan turned back toward the man to ask another question, and in the span of a single breath, the enclosure vanished. The wire, the crosses, the mound of soil, and the man were gone, replaced by uneven ground tangled with brush and blueberry vines. The soil looked compact and undisturbed. The wind returned in full, and the birds moved again in the trees as if nothing had been interrupted. Ethan stood at the rear boundary of the cemetery, staring at overgrowth that bore no sign of recent disturbance. He took a slow step backward and felt his heel strike something beneath the leaves. When he knelt and brushed debris aside, a stone marker emerged from the soil, tilted and half buried. The surname matched the 1894 ledger entry precisely. Beside it, smaller and more eroded, lay another marker bearing the infant's name. The discrepancy he had traveled north to resolve was beneath his hands. The segregated enclosure did not exist. The man did not exist. But the graves did. And they had been there long enough to sink into the earth and be nearly swallowed. Ethan photographed the stones carefully from multiple angles, then stood and looked once more at the patch of brush where the enclosure had been. There was nothing there to prove what he'd seen. Nothing to show anyone. The only physical fact he could carry with him was that the names were finally in the right place. And yet, as he walked back down through the rows toward the iron gate, he couldn't shake the feeling that he had not simply discovered two lost graves. He had stepped briefly and precisely into a version of the cemetery the town no longer admitted existed. He drove into town with the heater on and the photographs backed up to his phone, forcing himself to focus on what he could verify. The stones were real. The location was real. He could correct the family record and submit updates to the county archive if necessary. That was the purpose of the trip. That was the work. The rest of it, the wire square, the nameless crosses, the man speaking toward fresh soil, was harder to categorize. In daylight, it felt both more believable and more impossible. Nighttime experiences could be blamed on fear and fatigue. Daylight offered fewer excuses, which made the mind reach for them more desperately. Ethan stopped at the small historical society near the marina because it was the most efficient path toward confirmation. The building was modest, staffed by volunteers, with shelves of binders and town photo albums that smelled faintly of paper and dust. The woman behind the front desk listened politely as he explained his research and showed her the ledger entry and the photographs of the stones. Her attention sharpened immediately. She pulled a binder from a filing cabinet and flipped to an index card filed under cemetery discrepancies. Ethan watched her expression, the calm familiarity of someone who had seen the same questions repeated across decades by different families who assumed their confusion was unique. "Yes," she said, tapping the index card with her finger. "These names. We've had inquiries about them before. Not often, but enough." "Later records place them across the bay," Ethan said. "Later records place a lot of things across the bay," she replied, not unkindly. Township lines shifted. Clerks tried to standardize. Sometimes they guessed. If there wasn't a headstone in the expected place, they assumed relocation. Often there wasn't relocation. There was simply neglect. Ethan asked if the cemetery had ever been larger than the modern fence line. The woman shook her head. The boundary had been consistent. Then he asked carefully about the note he'd found regarding a segregated burial ground. Her gaze lifted from the binder to his face. She didn't look offended or surprised. She looked like someone deciding whether the person in front of her could handle the answer without turning it into a spectacle. "There was a separate ground," she said. "Early years. It wasn't always documented with the kind of detail you'd want. Some markers were wood. Crosses, those don't last." "Was it fenced?" Ethan asked. "Old wire at one point," she said. "Mostly practical back then, but it also drew a line people wanted drawn." "Is it marked now?" he asked. "No," she replied. "Not officially. Some people like to pretend it blended away on its own. It didn't. It was allowed to disappear." Ethan asked when the last burial took place. The woman told him, "The cemetery had been inactive since the 1970s, no legal burials since then. Fresh ground was not something the town should have." He requested any old maps or surveys. She returned with a folded, hand-drawn map that showed the cemetery boundary, and faintly in the back corner, a smaller square labeled in minimal ink, colored ground. The label was written with the same casual practicality one might use for a tool shed or drainage line. Seeing it in ink made Ethan's throat tighten. It turned his experience into something with historical scaffolding, which was both a relief and a new kind of dread. He asked about photographs. The woman directed him to local albums. Ethan flipped through old parades, school groups, winter storms, dock repairs, and Memorial Day ceremonies until he found a distant photograph taken from the cemetery hill, looking down toward the lake. In the far back corner, barely distinguishable, there was a faint square of lighter ground bordered by something thin and dark. The resolution wasn't clear enough to confirm crosses, but the geometry was there, a square within the larger yard. Ethan thanked her, photocopied the relevant pages, and returned to his hotel as the light began to fade over the water. In his room, he reviewed the photographs he had taken at the cemetery, not because he expected to find proof of a man who had vanished, but because he needed to see whether his camera had captured any anomaly his mind could not invent. The wide-angle photo aimed toward the back boundary looked normal at first, grass, trees, a hint of lake light. But when he stared longer, he noticed a subtle distortion in the center of the frame, shaped almost like a rectangle where the air looked faintly warped. The rest of the image was crisp. Only that section carried the irregularity, like heat shimmer that didn't match the temperature or the light. He zoomed in. It did not resolve into a figure or a fence. It remained a contained unevenness of space, an echo of a boundary. Ethan leaned back in the chair and felt the unease deepen into something steadier. The town had a documented history of a segregated burial ground. The cemetery had once held wooden crosses. That was real. That was recordable. The stones he'd found were real. Those were facts. But a fact did not explain a voice that responded to him. A fact did not explain soil that yielded under his shoes and then, a breath later, returned to hardened earth. The experience felt less like a haunting and more like a momentary overlap, as if the place had remembered itself and briefly insisted on being seen the way it had once been. He slept poorly that night, waking more than once with the sensation that he had forgotten something important, only to realize he was listening for a voice he did not want to hear again. Ethan returned to the cemetery in the morning before he left town. He told himself he was going back to verify the stones, to take additional photographs in better light, to make sure he had enough documentation to submit corrections later. Those were true reasons, but they were not the only ones. Some part of him needed to stand again at the rear boundary and see the place unchanged, to reassure his mind that what he had encountered was not waiting there like an unfinished sentence. The sky was overcast and the lake wind carried more bite. The cemetery looked smaller in gray light, the stones more uniformly weathered, the grass duller. He walked directly to the back corner without scanning rows, his boots wetting with dew. The brush was exactly as it had been after the enclosure vanished, tangled, settled, threaded with vines. There was no wire square, no white crosses. The ground at the rear boundary was compact, undisturbed. He stood there for several minutes, letting the ordinary sounds return fully. Wind in the trees, a distant gull, the faint movement of leaves. Nothing shifted, nothing sharpened, no voice threaded itself into the air. He crouched and brushed aside leaves near the edge of the brush and found, as he had expected, rusted fragments of old wire half buried in the soil. They were remnants of something that had existed long ago and then collapsed. There was no structure to them now, no neat square, only the evidence of forgotten borders. He left the cemetery with the same quiet care he had entered it, locked the car, and began the drive home. Over the next weeks, he filed the correction to his family records and sent the relevant documentation to the county archive with the photographs of the stones and the old map notation attached. He did it the way he always did, calmly, precisely, without insisting on a narrative beyond what he could prove. Yet the experience stayed with him in a way that ordinary research never did. Not as fear, exactly. More as a weight he couldn't shift into any familiar category. He found himself thinking about the man's tone, the way he spoke toward the mound of earth as though speaking to someone who could hear him. He thought about the absence of names on the crosses and how deliberate that absence must have been. He thought about the placard and how easily a single word could carry a century of decisions. Months later, he pulled up the wide-angle photo on his computer again. The distortion remained, it was still faint. Still contained, still shaped like a boundary. He sent it to a friend who worked in photography, asking whether it looked like a lens artifact. The friend replied with a list of possible explanations and ended with the most honest line. It's hard to say, because the rest of the frame is clean. That was the truth of the entire experience. Hard to say, because the rest of the world remained clean. Ethan never told the story publicly. He didn't post it online. He didn't offer it as proof of anything supernatural. He understood how quickly such things became entertainment, and he refused to let what felt like an unquiet piece of history become a campfire story. But the next time he walked into an old cemetery for research, he did so with a new awareness. He paid attention not only to inscriptions and dates, but to what was missing, to the places where boundaries had once been drawn and later erased, to sections that were no longer visible, as if visibility were the same thing as existence. Because once, in full daylight, an inactive cemetery had presented itself to him in two versions, the one that survived on maps and the one that survived in the ground, waiting for the right person to come looking. Ethan had gone north to correct a record to bring paper into alignment with stone. He had done that. The names were finally where they belonged. What he couldn't correct was the brief, precise moment when the past insisted on being seen and then withdrew again, leaving him with proof of graves and no proof at all of the thing that led him to them. And that, more than any ghost story, was what stayed with him.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.